Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets. That with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll also take a look at this morning's USDA FSA dump of acreage figures. And I say dump because that's really what it is. It's not an official report, but it did come out on the marketplace. Daryl Good will be here to explain what those numbers mean and how things could change, maybe or maybe not, in October, or at least by the time we get to January. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
That's the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were lower, down 4.5 cents in the December contract at $3.86. The March at $3.97 at a quarter, 4.5 lower. The May down 4.5 at $4.04. July down 4.09 at 4.09 and a quarter, down 4.25. And December at 4.08 and a quarter, 2.75 lower. Soy complex was mixed for the day. That's a new one. November contract down a penny and 3/4 at $8.87 at a quarter. January at $8.91 down 1.25. The March a quarter of a cent lower at $8.93 and a quarter. May futures were up a quarter of a cent at $8.95. July was unchanged. August unchanged. And September up a penny and a half of next year at $8.88 and a quarter. November next year up 2 cents at $8.84 and a quarter. Bean meal futures down $2.30 at $3.1630. The bean oil up 21 at $26.68. Soft red winter wheat December contract 6.5 cents lower at $4.88 and a quarter a bushel. And July down 7 cents at $5.04 and three quarters. The hard red July finish at $5.20 for the harvest month, down 6.25 cents. Live cattle futures in the October down $3 at $137.60. September feeders were $4.35 lower at $193.97 and a half. The October there at $188.25 also down sharply, $4.50 lower. In fact, November, January, and March all down $4.50 in the feeder cattle. Lean hogs in the October were 67.5 lower at $68.70, and December at $62.45. They finished down $1.40. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. In the energies, crude oil, October contract, a barrel at $47.12, up $2.53 at this hour. Ethanol futures at $1.52 and 3/10 of a cent per gallon, 6/10 of a cent higher. And gasoline on the RBOB, that's the wholesale price, $1.38 and 2/10 of a cent per gallon, up 4 and 9/10 of a cent. Diesel fuel or heating oil up 4.5 cents at $1.54 and a half. And the natural gas for the day at $2.66 and 6/10 of a cent, up 6 and 2/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 94 points higher at 16,712. The dollar down 0.235 at 95.55. And gold futures on the day up $15.90 at $1,118.50. The weather forecast, as it comes from the National Weather Service, says it's going to be beautiful today and tomorrow. Tonight, we'll see mostly clear skies, 61 degrees on a south wind at 5 to 7. Tomorrow, sunny, beautiful high of 86, south winds at 5 to 15, the gust to 24. And then Thursday evening, a chance of rainfall, that's set at 40%, mostly cloudy, a low of 67 degrees. South winds continue at 6 to 11, gusting to 15. Will remain with those south winds on Friday at 5 to 10 miles an hour and a 40% chance of thunderstorms throughout the day, mostly cloudy at a high of 84. And then Friday night, we step up the precipitation amounts to 70% coverage, mostly cloudy and a low of 66 degrees. On Saturday, partly sunny and 73. Saturday night, clear and 51. Sunday, sunny and 72. Sunday night, cloudy and 51. And to start the work week, mostly sunny skies and 73. Monday night, clear and 52. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon, the 16th day of September 2015. We're joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to talk about the marketplace. Thanks, Jackie, for being with us. Where do you want to start this afternoon?
Well, I think there's a number of things to look at. You know, we talked about some moving averages this morning. We saw December corn actually close below the 100-day, and support is now at 380 and a quarter, which is the 40-day. Not a big surprise, I guess, you know, just kind of drifting around. Beans did put in a double top at 894 and a half, and so that puts support at 880 and a quarter, which is the 20-day. So those are important technical areas. I thought you might be interested in some yield information that I got.
Sure.
I think this is always interesting because, you know, we talk about perspective in the markets, you know, and perception is what runs everything. I'm talking to one of my guys over in Ohio, and I said to him, so, you know, I know you've been out in the fields because I haven't been able to reach you. You know, how are things going? And he said, well, my yields, you know, I've been disappointed in both corn and beans. And I said, really? I said, so, you know, what are you running? You know, I was curious, you know, how bad is it? He said, well, I'm only running 10 to 30 bushels an average over my APH on corn and 5 bushels per average over on beans. I thought it was going to be a lot better than that.
Oh, what part of Ohio was he in?
He's south of Columbus is what he is.
Okay, I was going to say he was not in the northwestern corner of that state. I was going to bet on that.
No.
I was thinking he was in the southern half.
He's south of Columbus, but he was really disappointed because it was only running 10 to 30 bushels over their APH. And I tell you, you know, you talk about perspective, but talk to one of our guys out in Nebraska today. They took off their first 300 acres of dryland beans. Mind you, they have not had any rain in the last 30 days. And they ran a solid 80 bushels to the acre. Their normal is 20. They took off about 1,500 acres of dryland corn, 135 to 165. Their normal average is 45 to 50. And so, you know, he was just blown away with this because of the fact that they haven't had any rain in the last 30 days. They did not expect anything, you know, to be that good. They were floored. Their agronomists, they've been yield checking, and the guy's been pretty darn close over the years that we've been working together, and he's saying that they're probably going to have a record for their irrigated corn of 240 bushel to the acre, and that's primarily because most of the irrigation came from God this year rather than up out of the ground, you know. So I think it's interesting, and that takes me to the FSA. I know that you've done an article with Daryl Good, and I always love to listen to his stuff. But I look at it from a little different perspective. I keep hearing and seeing people say, you know, it's all about Illinois, it's all about Illinois. And so I took the 12 states off of today's that planted more than 2 million acres or were expected to plant more than 2 million acres. Of those, we had 1.4 million approximately that were prevented plant, which is 1.9%. Now, when you looked at the yield that the USDA currently has those 12 states at, it's about 108% above their 10-year average. And so when I took it and I put it back, I looked at what USDA is using for harvested acres, 91.22, which is pretty low in most cases. And, you know, they said they currently reported that Illinois had 87,468 prevented plant. Iowa had 115,411 prevented plant. And if you looked at the 10-year average yield for Iowa, it's 167.8, and for Illinois, it's 163.1. Keep in mind, last year Iowa had 178. They had poor weather. We had 200. If you took this, it would take about a 6.5 bushel gain in Iowa to offset a 7.5 bushel loss in Illinois, and that takes us down to 165.5. And most of the guys I talk to don't expect we're going to get quite that low. So I think we have to be very careful about our perspective. Granted, the FSA numbers, like we talked this morning, are just that. You know, they're not an official report. We'll get more information when it comes out in October. But I thought it was interesting. I personally think it's all about Iowa this year. It's not all about us. And so, you know, it's just another way of looking at it. Can it be done? Yeah, there's no question. Oh, if Iowa would pull out on Illinois from last year, it could be really tough for us.
Right. Well, It's interesting to hear those numbers. Iowa, and it has been a little bit about Iowa. Of course, USDA in that last report, the big change was Iowa dropped 2 bushels to the acre.
Yep. Yeah, it did. It did. You know, but everything comes down to where, you know, you have to remember that, you know, when you're, it depends upon where they're at and where they're doing their guesses from. You know, the earlier guesses were based off of a higher cob weight than what they had. You know, USDA didn't have all the information that, like, Chip had when he went through it. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying we have to keep in mind that if we're sitting back here saying we're going to go to $4 or we're going to go to $4.50 because we're losing production in Illinois, there's a lot of states basically that can help make up the difference. And I'll tell you, I think USDA really has some pretty hefty numbers here. For some of these states, I'm not sure we're going to make it on all of them, but on some of them we could make it or exceed it. So it just depends. I think it's interesting when you hear somebody in Ohio say that, you know, yields are disappointing. Now, how would that be taken if that's just the way you took it, right? You'd think that meant that they were really bad and they're 10 to 30 bushels an acre over APH.
Right.
So I think we have to keep everything in mind. But on a better note or on a more happy note, Budweiser's looking to buy out Miller Beer.
It's Miller time.
It's Miller time. You gotcha. If that would be realized, can you imagine that conglomerate would be worth $275 billion with sales of $73.3 billion a year? I thought that was just amazing, and the fact that they have no interest really—they could care less about the U.S. market. They're looking to Africa, which is the next beer frontier, is what they're saying.
Yeah, because Miller is owned by a South African company now. So
that's exactly right. Yep, that's what I thought was real interesting too. You know, but I think it's kind of cute. Africa is the next beer frontier. You know, so where's our next ethanol frontier? That's what we have to look for. You know, that's what we really need is an ethanol frontier. But kind of interesting stuff going on. Argentina, which I call Argentina Greece's big brother, because, you know, they back in 2001, they defaulted on $100 billion in debt, and they've been fighting with these people. They don't think that they should have to pay it back. And today, leave it up to these judges. A federal judge said today that a judge went too far in allowing the U.S. hedge funds to ask for payment. So this other judge said, go ahead and start seizing their property, and that's what they're doing. They've actually been seizing Argentine assets around the world. And this guy said, you can't take any military or diplomatic property, but you can take anything else. And so this has been going on since 2001, 14 years already. And so it's very interesting because Greece had the same attitude. We don't need to pay our debt back. You know, it's not important that we pay it back because they're rich enough. We don't have to do that. So just another picture of what it's like and what some of the thinking is all about. The immigrant situation over in Europe is really really growing, and there's a lot of infighting going on in the EU. You know, in fact, there's some talk right now that they're looking to what they're having is the same type of problems a lot of places have. Some countries are trying to take steps. They want to cut the welfare payments. The families that came there basically said they were looking for a job, worked a little while, quit, and now they're collecting welfare. And so, you know, you could just add insult to injury when you want to take people in and you want to help them, and then all of a sudden this situation comes up, and these countries are already having a really tough time. So Japan had their Standard & Poor's dropped the Japanese credit rating. Brazil went to junk bond status this week. So there's an awful lot of stuff going on out in the background, and they did cut the GDP expectations for China down to 6.5%. for this next year, from 6.7 last year and 7.4% the year before that. And so I think, you know, if you look at the overall big picture on why we've been swinging the way we have and why we have, you know, some money that's actually standing on the sideline is because of the implications to what the possible world economic situation could be if China does indeed continue to slow down.
Hey, can I take you to a different place? Because I had not made note of the feeder cattle move sharply lower. They're down more than $4. Why did that happen today?
Yeah, the $4.50 happened, you know, we're still trading it, but prior to what would be the normal pit close is when this happened. And there, too, I think you're looking at purely money flow more than anything else. There's a $10 difference between the cash feeder cattle market and the September contract, but that doesn't seem to make any difference. This whole market rate at the moment is all about money flow and about perception. And I believe what we're looking at here is perception, with the idea that they're fearful that exports won't be as robust as they had been. They're fearful for a lot of reasons that, when you look at the live cattle, feeder cattle are what drag live cattle down. But live cattle are going to fight their own battles because, you know, we're looking to have them open up the market to Brazil probably sometime in this next year. In other words, they would allow Brazil to sell cattle into the U.S. And so there's just an awful lot going on there. But that, you know, I think when you look at the overall picture, Todd, a lot of these markets are not, and they're not really acting on fundamentals in so many ways. They're acting on cash flow and money flow based on a world perception and a world perspective that we've got more problems and there's concerns, you know, because the Fed is coming out tomorrow. And if the Fed, there's only like 26%, I think, of the investors that they talked to said they thought the Fed would actually raise the rate tomorrow. But it's about 70% that believe they'll do it before the end of the year. And, you know, the European Central Bank came out very much saying, don't do this. Please don't do this. And if they do this, this is what you can expect to happen. So there's a lot going on in the outside markets. Yeah.
Well, we'll have more to talk about in the future. Hey, thanks for taking the time with me today.
Not a problem, Todd. Take care. Have a good one.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vanks. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. In today's agricultural news, across the board budget cuts known as sequestration and their impact on farm payments may be softened in spending negotiations over the next 3 months. Reports that price loss coverage, or PLC, and acreage risk coverage, ARC, may be cut 7% for the 2014 crop may be premature. Should Congress avoid a government shutdown the end of this month with short-term stopgap funding, Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley expects months of talks to soften sequestration.
There's going to be negotiations that assume $1 increase for domestic programs for every $1 increase in defense. And I rebel against that, but I think it's probably a fait accompli because the Democrats are not going to let us bring up any appropriation bills.
Unless these are offsetting increases in domestic programs, thus softening the need to cut PLC and ARC payments. CRP and prior year crop insurance payments are exempt. However, Grassley sees another dividend from negotiations, a possible rider to defund the controversial Waters of the U.S. rule by EPA.
We hope to get some riders on appropriation bills. Will it be for Waters or anything else? Who knows what it might be? But we have them in all of our appropriation bills, and it seems to me if Democrats want to spend more money, Republicans ought to be able to get the riders on appropriation bills.
However, the first step will be to pass a stopgap continuing budget resolution to get the government into the new fiscal year on October 1st. An expected shutdown over Planned Parenthood funding is shaping up to be a major hurdle. Let's go from the Hill over to EPA, where Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy said yesterday that EPA will stick to its promise to issue the volumetric requirements of the Renewable Fuels Standard, the RFS. McCarthy did not provide any details of the proposal. However, according to some reports, especially Growth Energy, during the organization's annual Washington, D.C. fly-in, McCarthy says she wants to make sure that the rules get done by November the 30th. And finally today, Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Pat Roberts has announced that markup of the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill simply will have to wait. Markup of the bill was initially planned for tomorrow. The announcement is a signal that Republicans and Democrats have not been able to come to any agreement on how to handle the future of the Healthier Schools Meal Rules. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Today, the Farm Service Agency released a new set of numbers, and while these are preliminary figures of acreage and crops, they do offer a hint of things to come in future official USDA estimates. First, it's really important to understand these numbers are raw and come with no explanation. They're simply a monthly dump of the aggregated acreage figures reported to FSA by those participating in federal farm programs. Participation requires farmers to report the numbers of planted, failed, and prevented plant acres of each program crop. These numbers are updated by FSA from August to January. Well, University of Illinois agricultural economist Darryl Good explains how the raw numbers make their way into the official USDA reports.
NASS, who is the official estimator of planted acres of the major crops, bases their estimates on surveys of producers with their final estimate based on a very large agricultural survey in December. But they do use what they call administrative data, primarily this FSA data, to tweak their own estimates of planted acres because theirs is based on a sample. They're not doing a census of acreage. So historically, there's been a fairly close relationship between the acres reported to FSA and actual planted acres as estimated by NASS. They use those numbers, so by definition, they tend to come together at the end of the season.
Remember, that's not until January, so it makes reading too much into the latest FSA numbers difficult, but it does offer what Darryl Good calls hints as to what changes might be coming. USDA NASS will incorporate the FSA figures into the October 9 crop production report. However, they will be from an updated set of FSA figures that the public won't actually see until October 14.
At this juncture, I think there's a tendency to try to read too much into what the FSA reports are saying in terms of trying to anticipate how NASS may change its final acres. But having said that, we do see through September this year that the difference between the estimate of planted acres by NASS and certified acres that have been reported to FSA so far, that margin is quite large. Whether it narrows considerably in October or not is the question. If it doesn't, then there may be a bit of a clue there that NASS will have to lower its estimate of planted acres of soybeans this year. But again, that's just a clue. You're trying to read out of the data, and we'll see in October whether that happens or not.
Typically, the FSA acreage for soybeans is 1.5 to 2 million acres lower than USDA's final number. The current FSA figures are off by 4.6 million acres. The October 9 crop production report could change, but we won't know exactly why or if it needs to change more until the FSA report is released 5 days later. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In a couple minutes, we'll return. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. In the main space, a couple of items to remind you of. Do visit our website. The address there is willag.org. Be safe for the harvest season. If you're not used to driving the back roads when you're out in the rural Illinois, rural America, be sure to be watching for slow-moving vehicles. They're usually very large, and they oftentimes, and they should have a big triangle on the back of them, but they're moving very slowly, and you will come up on them very quickly. They do pay attention and look for you, but when you're coming up from behind them, they won't see you. They will try to get out of the way eventually, so be cautious and be kind. These are big, big, heavy pieces of equipment, and it's really dangerous. You won't win that battle, so be careful out on the roads, and thanks to all the folks who are in the midst of harvest.
It's National Cinnamon Raisin Bread Day. It's also Feast of St. Cornelius, patron of cattle and domestic animals. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, the town of Shawmut changed its name to Boston. If not for this, we might be eating Shawmut baked beans and Shawmut cream pie. In 1736, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit died. Fahrenheit, a German physicist, invented the Fahrenheit temperature scale thermometer. It was the first thermometer to use mercury instead of alcohol, which also extended the temperature range of thermometers. He also discovered that each liquid has a different boiling point that would change with atmospheric pressure. In 1903, Luther Crowell died, an American inventor. He obtained over 280 patents, and perhaps is best known for designing a machine to make the square bottom paper bag still in use today. And in 1919, Marvin P. Middlemark was born. He invented the TV rabbit ear antenna, and among other minor inventions, a water-powered potato peeler. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the closing market report for Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is now here to look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start with the Corn Belt. What will harvesting conditions be like from east to west?
Well, it looks pretty good, actually. We're going to have only one or two disruptive disturbances moving across the region as we move forward through this next two-week period. The first one's going to come along as we get into the day tomorrow, actually, and taking us into Saturday. We have some showers that will be in the upper Midwest today, and they will probably become a little bit more significant when we get into that Thursday through Saturday time period. And at that point, we will probably encounter a few strong thunderstorms that will occur from Kansas to Wisconsin and parts of Michigan. And the storms that occur in that corridor will probably produce anywhere from 0.3 inch to an inch of rain, with some localized amounts maybe pushing upwards towards 1 to 2 inches in a few areas. That would probably favor northern Illinois and parts of southeastern Iowa, maybe northeastern Missouri as well. And for the most part, that precipitation event will be a fairly short-lived one, even though we're talking about Thursday and Friday. When it shifts to the south across the rest of the Ohio River Basin, it's not likely to hold together very well. So only some light amounts of shower activity will occur in those areas. In fact, the lower eastern Midwest will probably see a net drying biased pattern through a big part of the next week to week and a half. There will be a second frontal system that will impact parts of the Midwest as we get out towards the middle part of next week. It's actually going to be rather late in the week, and we'll see another chance for some showers and thunderstorms occurring with that frontal boundary. Otherwise, the weather across the Midwest is going to continue to be mostly good for crop maturation and for harvest progress.
Other problem areas around the nation or the planet that you've been watching closely?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about the hard red winter wheat country not doing well with moisture, and that is true in parts of the region, and it doesn't look like there's going to be a tremendous amount of rain coming into places like Colorado and western Kansas or western Nebraska. But we do have the same frontal boundary I just talked about for the Midwest here. The next couple of days will send some thunderstorms across the southwest plains as well. And so portions of the Texas Panhandle and western and northern Oklahoma, as well as south central Kansas, will probably end up with a little bit of rainfall to help improve the planting prospects in that area. But this is still mid-September. We can go until the early part, actually the middle part of October, without getting a lot of rain and still be able to pull off a crop out there. So it's not something we need to be terribly concerned with at the moment. Outside of the U.S., in Canada, there's some issues going on with harvest progress in parts of the prairies. That's not a big one either. And in the rest of the world, I think probably the biggest interest right now is twofold. Number one is in the former Soviet Union. There's a number of wheat and rye producing areas that are quite dry and do need to see significant rains in order to improve the emergence and establishment of those crops. And again, it's still early enough that they should be able to do okay as long as we get some rain in a couple of weeks. And then the other areas in northern India where the monsoon pulled out about 2 to 3 weeks ago, much earlier than normal. And there's a chance for some rain across some of that crop country in the next, let's say this weekend into early next week. And that should help to turn around the crop and reduce the stress that is present at the moment across that region.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas.